Welcome to Legal Talk, a monthly conversation about the American legal system with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore.
Good morning, Justice Moore. How are you today?
Good morning, Rich, and happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Happy Juneteenth to you.
Yes, absolutely. To all our listeners out there,
exactly.
This is the first official Juneteenth state, yeah, county holiday.
I think, is this the second time that it's a national holiday too?
Yes. The governor proclaimed this, or the legislature,
right,
proclaimed this to be a state holiday, so it's a court holiday for us.
You can probably explain the difference. I always kind of thought that because it was a national holiday, it carried all the way through to everything happening with the state. But
not necessarily. Like, I think Columbus Day is still technically a federal mail holiday,
okay,
and a federal holiday for federal employees, but like the state of Minnesota, I know, does not recognize that.
Okay.
And in South Dakota and some other states, they took the name away,
right,
and more like an Indigenous Americans,
right,
Day.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think there's necessarily uniformity on everything, but probably most things.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, anyway, the banks are closed today. There's no mail delivery. All the city offices and county offices are closed today, and for good reason, because we celebrate the end of slavery in America.
Absolutely.
That's a good
and
thing.
Frankly, a recognition by the rest of the country regarding that.
Yeah.
I mean, Juneteenth was never a secret in the African-American communities.
Right.
But I think to many of us, like myself growing up, it wasn't something that was on anybody's radar that I knew growing up.
Man, this is my birthday, and I didn't know it was a thing until probably 10 years ago. So, and I know a lot about June 19th, man. So
I'm sure you've studied it carefully, Rich. Yeah, there's been an awakening regarding,
yes,
this,
yes,
I think, nationally, and for good reason.
Right.
And so,
absolutely,
yes, we honor the traditions of our members of our community whose ancestors were, you know, frankly, part of the institution, the,
mm-hmm,
dreadful institution,
mm-hmm,
of slavery, and we celebrate its banishment, and, you know, we work every day to make a more perfect union.
Yes.
We're not quite there yet, obviously.
No.
We
no.
haven't been for many, many centuries, but yeah, it's a lovely day, and so I hope people can get out and enjoy the day.
Indeed, absolutely. You know, normally this part of the show, I like to ask you what's been going on with the court. You had a big week last week. There was some the big news coming out. So let's talk about, before we get to the news with the Chief Justice and everything that goes along with that, which I think will be the body of the show today. What else has been happening with the court? I mean, you guys have you pretty well wrapped up?
All but one case has been heard.
Okay.
We generally do not hear cases in July or August, but we, mm-hmm, accepted review of a termination of parental rights case out of a western Minnesota county that raises some pretty important due process issues regarding parents' rights,
okay,
in a termination of parental rights case. And we took that. And that will be, I believe, July 10th or 11th. We are arguing that. But that'll be the last case of this term.
Okay.
So June is traditionally the last sitting, as we say, of, mm-hmm, of the year. We had a busy June. This was more than we normally do in June.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the commissioner's office tries to wind us down a little bit because the focus is obviously trying to get opinions done. And unlike the Supreme Court of the United States, we are not required to have all our opinions issued before we, you know, as they say, stand up and recess for the term.
Mm-hmm.
SCOTUS, as we call it, does. And so they're going to be issuing a whirlwind of decisions over the,
yeah,
next 2 weeks. So yeah, stay tuned.
They're trying to push a lot of stuff out.
Yeah,
too. Yeah.
And, you know, as always is the case, the toughest cases are the last issued. And
right.
So the last couple of opinion days in June, I mean, you've got legal commentators just, you know, sitting by their phones and computers waiting,
mm-hmm,
for the release of the really important opinions. We've had a few incredibly important opinions, though. The Indian Child Welfare Act was held to be constitutional on a 7-2 vote by the court last week, which was frankly not predicted.
There was a lot about that was surprising, not the least of which was the fact that Amy Coney Barrett wrote the
She did.
The majority majority opinion.
Yeah, and I think the Indian Child Welfare Act is something we should discuss on a future show, but basically it was passed by Congress in an effort to prevent Native kids from being separated unreasonably from Native communities.
Right,
unfortunately,
right.
We have a terrible tradition and history of that in our country.
Yeah.
And so that decision was issued last week. And then we had a very important voting rights case under Section 2 of the Federal Voting Rights Act, with the Chief Justice writing for a 5-justice majority holding that Alabama's redistricting violated Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act by basically diluting African-American votes in the state of Alabama.
Right.
And so that's going to require a redistricting and probably some changes to the composition of Congress. And so the principles that, you know, I can't recall exactly what the current Republican majority is in the House of Representatives, but I think it's maybe 4 or 5 votes.
Yeah.
And you've got a number of states that the composition of their delegation could be affected by this. So stay tuned.
You know, if we have an opportunity down the line, I would like to talk to you about the Voting Rights Act, because there's been so much change to it in the last, 10 years? I don't remember exactly when
the Shelby County case,
right.
That found portions of Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which was what we call the pre-clearance requirement, where states that had unfortunately had a history of segregated voting and discrimination against racial minorities had to have changes to their redistricting plans approved by Congress in advance of those being implemented. And that was struck down on a close vote, with the Chief Justice writing that particular opinion too. And that I think is what you're referring to.
Yes.
That was about 2013, I believe.
Yeah,
and so that's been, the change in the Voting Rights Act. I mean, the Voting Rights Act has been, reapproved by Congress with a large consensus that it's necessary. But yeah, that, like the Indian Child Welfare Act, are things that we could definitely talk about on future shows.
Maybe we could have a show perhaps in July where we kind of go through some of the things that SCOTUS ruled on.
I think so, yeah. By the July show, hopefully, we'll know what SCOTUS actually was involved with. But our court is busy right now finishing trying to get opinions issued. We're scrambling, and so that's really the push right now. It's driven by our law clerks. Our law clerks are doing a lot of heavy work on opinions, and our law clerk transition occurs at the end of July. And so, the calendar is approaching, the last couple of weeks of June. And so we have them for another 5 or 6 weeks, and we really need to move forward on things. So that's really what's going on. And then members of the court do occasionally try to get a little time away.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard because there's always work to do.
Right.
I mean, there's never we don't do like the Supreme Court does, where literally the justices leave Washington and they're just done for the term, and they come back in October.
Yeah. There's no first Monday in October for you guys.
We start right after Labor Day, but because our opinions aren't required to be finished by the time we recess for the end of the term, we continue to work on them, and so we have opinions being released in July and August,
sure,
through all the summer, and then we're back at it in September.
And some of the cases, the felon voting decision took a little over a year to
that was yeah that was out. Extraordinary. That was there are a lot of reasons for that, some of which I probably can't really get into here. But the bottom line on that is that was extraordinary. But yeah, that one lasted. When it spills, we call them holdover cases, when they spill over into the next term, and we try to avoid those, but they're, they're kind of unfortunately inevitable, particularly some of the hard ones where there are separate writings from the court.
Right.
Unanimous cases generally are mostly done by the conclusion of the law clerk term. So, yeah, and ironically, we're interviewing law clerks later this week for the 24-25 term.
Wow.
So it's just the show continues to go.
You guys don't get any rest at all, do you?
Well, it's just different than, the district court, where you could, if you were a district court judge, generally you could look at the calendar and kind of block some time off, because you controlled the schedule,
right,
and we just don't. I mean,
right,
the schedule kind of controls us, is what happens.
Yeah.
And so we adapt to it and work through it, but it's fine. I mean, we're We're doing well. We're very pleased with the legislature's funding of the district courts and mm-hmm. the Supreme Court and Court of Appeals. Money was given for drug court enhancements yeah. related to the cannabis bill, which are really important. Salaries for staff and judges were raised. Law clerks are getting a particular attention by the court and the legislature to try to really help us fill the ranks of our law clerks, particularly That's in district good. Court, because we have a number of judges in this state that right now are really struggling to get law clerks, and they are essential for the operation yes. of the court.
Yes, they are. Have there been any, since you and I last spoke, have there been any important decisions? Well, they're all important decisions, but any significant, especially significant decisions?
You know, they all are important decisions. I don't think we've had any, what I would say are, the front page of the paper decisions. Sure. They're important to the lawyers and the parties involved at all. One exciting and good thing that happened in June was the investiture of our newest federal district court judge, Judge Jerry Blackwell, yeah. who is the seventh district court judge in Minnesota. The federal district court has 7 congressionally designated district court judge positions. Mm-hmm. And then we have a number of judges that they kind of semi-retire, or they go on senior status, and so they take a reduced caseload. Minnesota actually has a need for more than 7 federal district court judges, but it's a, frankly, like everything in Washington, it's political. And so mm-hmm. that 8th seat that's been sought by the congressional delegation, we haven't quite got there yet, but the work done by our senior judges fills in the gaps. But Judge Jerry Blackwell's investiture was in June, a couple weeks ago. I attended that with 2 members of my court. It was spectacular. It was just a celebration of a lot of things. Judge Blackwell is, for those of you who may not know who he is an African-American lawyer, went to law school in North Carolina, but has been a practicing lawyer in the Twin Cities for basically as long as I have, mm-hmm. 38 years mm-hmm. or something like that. And he's 35 years. And he was involved in the trial of Derek Chauvin. Keith Ellison brought him in as one of the team that prosecuted Mr. Chauvin. Mr. Blackwell has been involved in some really notable civil litigation. And Judge Blackwell is now our newest federal district court judge. And so he, in a really jubilant and celebratory investiture. I mean, it's not, frankly, every investiture that gets the Sounds of Blackness to come perform right. at the investiture, and Judge Blackwell did, and it was wonderful.
That's fantastic.
Beautiful reception, and yeah, he joins a district court that is busy and is in need of having that seat filled, and so it's combination of Biden appointees and Trump appointees mm-hmm. and even Obama, Bush. I mean, that's, and Judge Doty, David Doty, is mm-hmm. a senior member of the court in his early 90s, and he's still a senior judge and still hanging in there. So
I remember reading about it. he was heavily involved in the NFL free agency case.
Yes, he was.
So and that would have been early to mid 90s. Yeah.
Yes. The federal judges, there isn't a retirement requirement like mm-hmm. in state court. You are, you have to retire at 70 in state court. Federal judges usually take senior status at some point, mm-hmm. but they can kind of continue to carry on. And so mm-hmm. we're fortunate that they do. So that was fun, Rich. And then obviously the real big news coming out of out of our court last week was Chief Justice Gilday's announcement that she is going to leave the court, step down from Chief Justice and from being a member of the court as of October 1st. And so that news was just delivered last Wednesday to us and to the public later in the week. And so we're still trying to digest it and figure out what it means. But obviously, Chief Justice Gilday has been, the rock that's carried us through a number of things over the past 13 years that she's been Chief Justice. And I mean, the changes in the court system over 13 years, it's hard for those who don't work in it to understand the gravity of it. But let's just say that we were dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st century regarding technology and e-court. And had we not done those things, the pandemic would have been even a worse experience.
Yeah.
But because of the technology improvements and the focus on e-court that she stewarded, we got through the pandemic, you know, not completely unscathed. We've got some backlogs, but for the most part, business went on as usual. And so Zoom Court is here, likely to stay in some way, shape, or form, and that was under her stewardship. And the state owes her a huge debt of gratitude for her leadership. And frankly, the entire judicial branch does too. I remember when I was, you know, a district court judge during the first days of the pandemic, it was kind of lonely and scary out there. You know, we were in Nobles County, you know, one judge county, me and my staff trying to figure this stuff out. What do we do? And we would get weekly messages from her, weekly emails of encouragement, reassurance, and praise. And, you know, it meant something to know that she cared enough about what we were doing 3 hours away from St. Paul that she was, you know, and they weren't addressed to us specifically. There were system-wide emails, but she continued to do that throughout the pandemic, urging us to take care of ourselves, the people we served, our staff and coworkers. And, you know, now that we're on the other side of that, we're moving to a different direction, and she's going to be moving on, and that's going to be, it's really going to be a seismic event for our court. Right. I mean, we haven't had a Chief Justice in 100 years that has worked as long as she has.
Wow.
13 years.
Wow.
I mean, that's, trust me, that job is a 24/7, 365 experience.
And that's without a pandemic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And right. Even in normal times,
right.
You know, the Chief Justice has to deal with all the personnel and administrative issues behind the scenes that most of us don't have to deal with.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, some really hard decisions have to be made. She's the spearhead of the budget initiatives that are before the legislature. And there's a lot of work done there. She's on the pardon board. We've certainly heard enough about that.
Absolutely.
Over the past year, the Chief Justice is involved in all sorts of civic education and public interest matters. And so it's an enormous job, and she's done the job spectacularly, and we're going to miss her. It's going to be a different place when she goes, and we still have her for a little while, three months, I guess. It's going to come quick though, because, you know, we're going to come back in September and she's going to be with us, I guess, for 1 month before she retires.
Well, okay. So you and I talked a little bit about this on Thursday, but I have about 36 questions to ask about this whole thing. So we just sort of defined the role of the Chief Justice. You're talking about the person that is really, I mean, I don't want to say runs the judicial system, but they run the system that operates the judicial system.
Yes, the Chief Justice is the head of the Judicial Council, which is the governing body that runs the court system.
Right.
And the Judicial Council is comprised of each of our 10 judicial districts has a chief judge. They are there. The Court of Appeals chief judge is present. And then the Chief Justice appoints other members to be on the Judicial Council. And they are the governing body that enacts policy that governs the entire court system.
Right,
and they
meet
monthly, the Judicial Council. They live stream their meetings, too. That's one thing I neglected to mention is the push for transparency in the court system that she was part of. You know, obviously the expansion of cameras in the courtroom, but also live streaming and archiving oral arguments. I mean, that hadn't been done historically. And now for the Judicial Council, too. So you can log on if you want to see what happens during a Judicial Council meeting and hear the discussion. And, you know, most of it's pretty routine, but occasionally there's some pretty, you know, impactful discussion that is happening. And so, yeah, there's just a bunch of administrative work that the Chief Justice is involved with.
Right.
Plus, she maintains a caseload and, you know, law clerks like the rest of us and is expected to, you know, obviously she oversees and presides over our oral argument calendar and, you know, the attorney admission ceremony and all those things too.
We're having a little technical difficulty with the justice's microphone here. So what then is the process? I mean, what we're talking about here is really filling two different roles, possibly with the same person, maybe not. She's retiring as Chief Justice, and she's retiring from the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think it's important to emphasize she's made it clear she's not retiring from the practice of law, but she's right. stepping down from the Supreme Court. That means that she will not be Chief Justice, and she won't return to being just an Associate Justice either. She will be leaving the court on October 1st, and so that will create a vacancy in the Supreme Court that has to be filled. And it will be a need for a new Chief Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could be the same person. I mean, there is tradition for governors to sometimes bring new people into the court that perform both roles, that are
right.
both a Chief Justice and the new member of the court. Mm-hmm. That's what Governor Plenty did with Eric Magnuson when he was appointing Chief Justice from private practice.
Mm-hmm.
However, oftentimes our Chief Justices have come from within the ranks. Associate Justices who have been, for lack of a better word, promoted or elevated to Chief Justice. Mm-hmm. That was Chief Justice Blatz was a member of the court. Chief Russell Anderson was a member of the court before he was appointed Chief Justice. Alexander Sandy Keith from Rochester was a member of the court. And she will be a... her position will be filled one way or the other. And mm-hmm. so how it's going to be filled is entirely up to the governor.
The governor decides who he wants to appoint. Does that appointment have to be confirmed, or does he have the autonomous power to say this person will be the Chief Justice?
There's no confirmation requirement in Minnesota. So
okay.
the governor will appoint the person as Chief Justice, and the governor appoints all vacant positions on the court.
Okay.
And this comes, as you know, Rich, we've talked about the fact that Associate Justice Barry Anderson will be reaching mandatory retirement
yep.
next year. So between the two of them, Chief Justice Gilday and Justice Anderson, they will both be leaving the court within approximately a year's time.
Yeah. Now, as I understand it, Justice Gilday was set to be on the ballot in 20 because we elect all of our judicial officers in Minnesota. You are an elected official,
right?
She was set to be on the ballot in 2024. So now, as I get this, if the Governor Walz, and I'm hypothetically, let's just say, well, let's not even use any names, if Governor Walz appoints somebody to the Chief Justice Chief Justice role who was elected or reelected last year, that's still part of that justice's term, correct? So
right.
that person won't have to face reelection in 2024 if they had been reelected last
year.
Yeah,
that's my understanding.
Okay.
I'm a little fuzzy on the specifics of that, but I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Generally, if you're a new member of the court, like I was in 2020, you have to run in the first general election that comes after you've been on the court for a particular period of time. So mm-hmm. normally it's about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Chief Justice Gilday's position on the Supreme Court is up for election in the 24 election cycle.
Right.
And so because there'll be a vacancy in that position, the governor will fill that sometime later this summer,
right.
Early fall. And likewise, Justice Anderson, same position, same situation. He will be leaving the court, and the governor will have the ability to fill his position. And then whoever gets that position will then stand for election probably 2 years after that, probably
sure.
the 26th election.
Okay. So then we just removed Justice Gilday from the ballot altogether, and whoever is appointed can... It doesn't have to be elected in 24 again.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Presuming they are not a current member of the court whose seat is, on the ballot in 24. There are, I think, at least two other members of the court whose seats are up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, I need to look at that a little bit more closely. But, yeah, so the governor will fill vacant positions on the court, both the chief justice and any associate justice mm-hmm. positions that are there. Mm-hmm. The Senate does not confirm appointments in the Minnesota court system, and so they will serve until the next election.
Okay.
And then if they're reelected, they'll get a new six-year term after that.
Right. Okay. Now, the last time the state went through this was 13 years ago. Were you a district judge at that point?
I wasn't. Okay. That was 2010. Yeah. I was a county attorney in Worthington. I ended up getting appointed in, I guess it was, I started in March of 12, and the vacancy that I filled was announced in late 2011.
Okay.
This was right at the start of the Mark Dayton gubernatorial tenure, because he would have started in 2011 after mm-hmm. being elected in 2010. So the Chief Justice was appointed by then Governor Tim Pawlenty mm-hmm. to the position then. And so, yeah, I mean, she's the only Chief Justice that most of us on the court, and I say that broadly, the mm-hmm. district court, mm-hmm. trial courts, mm-hmm. the appellate courts have really worked under as a judge.
Right.
I mean, some do predate her, but it's going to be a big change. I mean, the Chief Justice is the sort of the, you know, the leader of the court system, the cheerleader, the public face.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
You know, there's been, you go down the list, I think I was counting this morning, actually, the number of chief justices we've had historically, we've had 21 since 1858 in the state. And
wow.
One was, I think we've actually had one, I think, served two non-consecutive terms back post-territory. And we did have some territorial chief justices, too. But so we've had 21 people in that position, and they, you know, some incredible legal... Mm-hmm. You go down the list. I mean, the people that have served in that role have been, you know, have had statewide impact, statewide impact. And so it's a big appointment. It's frankly a legacy type appointment.
Oh, it absolutely is. And now, I guess I'm asking to be a bit speculative here, but will the vetting process for the Chief Justice, will that mirror the process for appointment just to the bench?
That is entirely up to the governor.
Okay.
I mean, that's a gubernatorial prerogative. You know, the Judicial Selection Commission is always involved in the selection of, or the vetting of and recommendation of trial court judges, district mm-hmm. court judges. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the governor, usually in consultation with members of the Judicial Selection Commission, decides mm-hmm. what the process will be for appellate court positions. So it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But the governor's prerogative is the governor's prerogative. I mean, he could have an announcement, you know, in the next couple weeks of you know, somebody that he wants to put in that position. It's entirely up to him.
And theoretically, he could appoint anyone he wanted, right?
That meets the requirements of, you know, the job, which are, you know, not, I mean, there's sort of the written requirements, and then there's the unwritten requirements.
Right,
but yeah, it's an important appointment. I'm confident that the governor will employ a process similar to that he has used with other appellate positions. He's going to get robust input from, you know, he does his job. He does his homework. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't expect that to be anything different now than now. So, and I think out of deference to the current Chief Justice, my guess is that he's going to let the dust settle a little mm-hmm. bit on this and, mm-hmm. and, you know, not get in the way of, you know, her in any way.
Do you expect he would talk to her and listen to any suggestions that she might have to at least put on a short list?
I would certainly hope so. That's a conversation
right.
that I would not be part of. Let's put
right.
it that
yeah.
way. But I would fully expect that there'll be a lot of consultation with, you know, prior members of the court, current members of the court, other people of statewide leadership, because it's a really important appointment.
Okay. So timing wise, and prioritizing things. The first order of business is let's appoint a new Chief Justice. That person might be new to the bench, or they might not be. So I get a little foggy in all of this, only because, all right, so if I decide that I'm going to take someone who is currently sitting on the Supreme Court, and I'm going, you know, if I'm the governor, right, which is laughable, but if I decide I'm going to appoint somebody from the Supreme Court to Chief Justice, I can just do that, right?
Right.
Now, I still have to fill Justice Gilday's seat.
Yes.
So that's the next priority. Or I can just decide I'm going to reach down to a district court judge or whomever, and this person is going to fill the seat and is also going to be the Chief Justice.
Correct.
Is what I want to ask you is that weird? Is it weird to pull somebody out from outside of the court and put them in charge? That to me, that feels it feels like I would want somebody who has been on the court to be put in charge. I that's just, you know,
it probably hasn't been the likely historic tradition that, right, somebody completely outside the court system has been appointed Chief Justice, but it has happened.
It has happened.
And Eric Magnuson was the most recent example of that. Governor Plenty appointed him from a private law practice directly to the being the Chief Justice. Personally, I think that would be a very, very, it's an incredibly challenging assignment, and it helps to have some inside understanding of the mechanisms and the process and how the administration works. But, you know, there can be arguments made for, the fresh look, fresh face type of thing, too. So, you know, yeah, I'm sure if we went down the list for those 21, you know, former chiefs, we could find, you know, a handful that probably were that, maybe even more so in the older days. I think it's been more likely that the person appointed is a current person within the court system, either at the appellate or district court level. Right. But there's no, you know, there's no mandate that that happens.
Yeah. It just feels like a huge jump to me. That's all.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. All right. So we've got it. Then we appointed Chief Justice. Then we have to fill Justice Gilday's seat. She and that person will take that seat as of October 1st or October 2nd.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. That would be my understanding.
Okay.
Yes.
And then Justice Anderson is going to retire next year in 2024.
Well, he reaches mandatory retirement in October of 24.
Okay.
And so, you know, by state statute and rules, you can work until the last day of the month that's your 70th birthday.
Oh, okay.
So technically he could work until the end of October of 24.
October
31st. Don't think that's likely to be the plan, simply because of how our terms work. Sometimes it's easier for that transition to occur with the change of a term. That's what Justice Lilahog did, the justice I replaced. He left at the end of the 2019-2020 term, which ended in July of 2020, and then I started the first business day in August of 20, along with the new law clerk. So it was sort of a good time for a changing of the guard. But it's entirely up to Justice Anderson's prerogative, and he has made no announcements of that. And so, you know, we'll give him the opportunity to decide what he wants to do and when.
By all means, let's not sweep him out before
go. He's our senior member of the court and is incredibly important because of his breadth of knowledge and institutional knowledge. And that's one thing that I think listeners should be aware of. We're going to be losing, by my calculations, about 37 years of Supreme Court experience by October of 24, if not earlier, depending on when Justice Anderson retires. And so that's pretty cosmic. I mean, that's seismic. That's a lot of institutional knowledge and experience leaving us. And that is something that I think we're all going to be thinking a lot about.
You probably can't comment on this at all. I'm just going to sort of throw the statement out there. Justice Gilday and Justice Anderson are the final two appointees on the bench by Republican governors. And now, just because a Republican or a Democrat appoints somebody does not, in fact, we hope, doesn't mean that they're going to conform to the political identity of the person that appointed them. But, I mean, there will be talk about that, that we're going to have a Supreme Court of complete Democratic appointees.
There will. I think it's really important for listeners to understand that, you know, there are in Minnesota, we don't appoint Republican or Democratic judges. These are nonpartisan positions. The expectation and the understanding is that you hang up your partisan hat, you know, when you take the bench and you leave it there, and you are now following the rule of law and the statutes and the common law. And you know, that's the ideal, and that's the way that it should be. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even though, yeah, we've had members of the court appointed by governors from all three different parties. When Governor Ventura was there, with Independence Party, you know, candidates there too, or appointees. And I think it's really dangerous for people to make any assumptions that a justice, just because they're appointed by somebody from party A, is A, a partisan, or B, is going to follow in lockstep whatever that party's goals are.
Right.
In fact, the history books are written with stories of justices that kind of confound expectations. And I've seen that even in my 3 years on the court. I mean, you know, you sometimes people make assumptions about people just based on who appoint them. And that is really not a good idea, because everybody comes to the bench with their own legal experiences, their own personal stories, their own personal life experiences in the law. And, you know, how they apply that to their work is, you know, a part of their own philosophy, jurisprudential or otherwise. But it's not a partisan exercise. We are not taking, you know, sort of a litmus test, like, okay, how's this going to poll with this or that?
Right.
These decisions that we have to issue are on hard cases. They're tough, but they're, for the vast majority of them, they're not political in any partisan way. Occasionally we do run up against some cases that have some of those overtones. There's no question about that. And we do our level best to avoid getting ourselves caught in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we, frankly, confound everybody.
Wow.
Oftentimes both sides are a little unhappy with the decision.
Which means you're doing the right thing.
I think so. We take an oath to the Constitution,
yes.
Rich, state and federal. We don't take an oath to any political party or any governor. We are adhering to the rule of law and the Constitution, and how that manifests itself oftentimes is a disappointment to certain types of people and certain partisans that make assumptions about things. This is not the Supreme Court of the United States that unfortunately has become, you know, very, very much tinted with that sort of sense of, you know, partisanship. But even that,
need look no further than Thursday.
Yeah.
With the ICWA decision.
7-2.
Yeah,
7-2. That means that every one of the justices that President Donald Trump appointed voted to uphold the Indian Child Welfare Act.
That is astonishing.
And so think of that for a second. And Justice Gorsuch has been one of the staunch supporters of tribal sovereignty and tribal rights on the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Obviously a Donald Trump appointee. So, yeah, people need to just step back and let things happen, and
yes.
not make assumptions about people or how they're going to be. Let their actions speak loudly. You know, words are, talk is cheap. Let's see what the writing says, as we like to say. So yeah, we're going to step back and allow this process to go forward, and be working with a new colleague as Chief Justice in October. And it's going to be, every time the court, I've been told this because this hasn't happened since my time on the court, but every time a new member of the court comes in, you have a new court, you have new relationships, new dynamics, new kind of, you know, configurations. And so when that person is the Chief Justice, that's, you know, that person's leading deliberations. It's setting the culture for the court, the culture for the branch. And so it's going to take a little time for that to kind of settle in.
Yeah.
But I'm confident that we'll be just fine in October. It's going to be a big change.
All right. So just sort of give you a chance here to pay tribute to your quote unquote boss. Tell us how has it been working with Justice Gilday?
You know, Rich, it almost gets a little emotional talking about it. I came to this to the judiciary, and I think the listeners know I was a district court judge in way outstate Minnesota, Nobles County, 20,000 person county in southwest Minnesota, and was appointed in 2012. And I remember when we were working on the guest list for my investiture ceremony that was held then. You know, we were obviously focusing on local people, and then I heard from the court administrator that the Chief Justice was going to be coming to my investiture with a former classmate of mine, Jeff Shorba, Carleton classmate, who is the state court administrator. Jeff took over a few years before I started as district court judge. And so on a cold, kind of nasty early March day in 2012, she made the trip from St. Paul to my investiture in Nobles County. And you know, trust me, the people in that courtroom took notice of that. Yeah. I mean, you know, they might not have been able prior to that date to know who the Chief Justice was, but they knew after that. That makes a huge impression to a brand new judge. I mean, that somebody in that aura of power took the time out of her incredibly busy schedule to drive 3 hours to Worthington, Minnesota to sit in a courtroom and listen to, you know, the investiture ceremony of the new judge and participate in it. Anybody who knows her knows she is a warm and funny person. She is incredibly smart, one of the smartest lawyers that I've ever worked with at any level. She's decisive. She is not afraid to make a hard decision. You know, she tells us, you know, we're paid to do hard things, and that they don't get easier by delaying them. She's been a role model to a number of people. She has been a, you know, voice in the legislature to the people of the state of Minnesota. She delivers the state of the judiciary, you know, comments every year to talk to the public about the role of the courts. And so I had the honor of having her at my investiture. And then obviously she was at my investiture in St. Paul and has sworn me in twice as a member of the Supreme Court. And so, you know, I'll always be grateful to her for that. You always remember as a judge who took the time out of their schedules to come to your investiture. Right. And particularly as an outstate judge, you know, frankly, it can be a little tough to convince people to get in a car in the middle early March and, you know, fight the roads to come to southwest Minnesota. That's the kind of person she is. She grew up in Plummer, Minnesota, northwest Minnesota, okay. A town of a couple hundred people. Wow. I mean, she grew up, I mean, this is not somebody that grew up in any type of what I would characterize as a, you know, sort of upper middle class suburban sort of environment. She's a hardworking person who grew up in a small town in outstate Minnesota. And I don't know anybody that works harder than her. Her organizational skills, her work ethic are unparalleled. You know, I've heard through her law clerks in terms of her methodology for attacking her work and her calendar, and it's extraordinary. I mean, she is she's an amazing person and an excellent lawyer who thinks broadly about the implications of the decisions that we're going to make. And she, I think Justice Lilhaug said this last week, and it's so true. She helps us do better and look better as a court because she's thinking about things that we need to think about that sometimes get lost in the minutiae of the particular case. You know, she talks about the plumber, you know, VFW test. How is this case going to sell? If you were sitting on a bar stool in the plumber VFW,
right,
trying to explain to somebody about what this case is about and what it means, how would this sound? Would this pass that test?
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's just a sense of, you know, her connection to, you know, ordinary Minnesotans. I mean, obviously she's a incredibly erudite and smart person, but she still has that connection. She's a equestrian. She's got a horse, Goldie. She's very much involved in equestrian activities. And, you know, it's no secret that she suffered a terrible personal loss in the fall of 21 when her husband Andy passed away unexpectedly. And, you know, that there's just no way that can't affect a person. And I'm I'm happy that she's at a point in her career where she's making a decision for herself here that I think is one that she's no doubt thought through. And, you know, the good news is that she's not going anywhere, my mm-hmm. understanding. I fully expect to see her continue on the scene in some way, shape, or form in Minnesota's legal culture. I could think of a number of organizations that I'm sure would be jumping at the opportunity to have somebody with those legal skills be involved.
Oh, of course.
But as she joked the other day, you can't exactly look for a new job when you're Chief Justice. So I think she's probably going to take some time to digest things a little bit and then right. Hopefully get some traveling in and do some things that she hasn't done. Her schedule is one that I'm pretty confident the number of vacation days she's used over her tenure as Chief Justice has been pretty small. She's a hard worker.
Weren't you telling me that for years and years, people you worked with just didn't remember her not being there?
She's there all the time,
day in and day out.
Yeah, she's the most dedicated person. I mean, she is. It's you know, we talk about the job of judge being consuming, but that job in particular, you know, that's 24/7, 365. If there's something on fire anywhere in the court system, the Chief Justice is going to end up knowing about it. Right. And sometimes those fires happen at tough times.
Right.
I mean, I can think of the number of, you know, judges in just in my time who have had, you know, spouses pass away or other tragedies occur.
Right.
You know, she's involved in consultations on the welfare of those people. She's working with district court judges on chief judges in particular on crises that occur. They always do. I mean, there's some 300 judges in the state. Something's always going on. So I think, Rich, that it's a job that frankly, 13 years would be a long time to do to anything, but that particular job, it would be a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, congratulations to Chief Justice Gilday for job well done.
Yeah, she leaves the court system in a good place.
Yeah,
we are in a better place because of her leadership. Our Governor Pawlenty's judgment in appointing her has been borne out over time.
Indeed.
She was appointed to the Supreme Court after a very short stint on the Hennepin County District Court. And, you know, to many, was somewhat of an unknown. Mm-hmm. And boy, she has shown us why the governor had that kind of confidence in her. So, yeah, it's going to be a big year, Rich. We are going to be a lot of transitions on the court in a relatively short period of time. Two new members in a year. Membership has been, I guess, just a little hog left in 20. So we've had 3 years of kind of, you know, the same court. So we're going to have a new court.
It occurs to me, you're not going to be the new kid anymore.
No, I won't be the junior justice. You know, I won't have to get the coasters out for conference
right.
and go walk the law clerk candidates in. It's going to be weird because I'm so used to that role right now. And yeah, there's a lot of things that change. You know, the seating assignments are done by seniority, sometimes offices. I mean, it's going to make for some changes. So, exciting and interesting would be two terms that I would appoint
right,
to. But
right.
yeah, it's important for the people to know, though, that the work will go on and there'll be a new Chief Justice starting on the 2nd of October. And, you know, that'll be right at the start of our October case sitting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it'll be a baptism by fire going right into oral arguments.
Right. Right. Well, is there anything else that we should be looking for in the next, probably not in the next month, except for the one,
yeah, we have one termination argument. Of parental rights case that's argued in July. The rest of the next couple months will be relatively quiet on the public side.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be finishing opinions. That's going to be the key. Finishing opinions, trying to squeeze every ounce of work out of these poor law clerks that we can, and then going forward. So you know, Rich, yeah, we'll be back in July. I think we should talk a little bit about the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And maybe by that point in time, we'll have some news on the Chief Justice front. But I would guess probably not. I think we probably in July will be chatting mostly about U.S. Supreme Court cases. And we could chat about the ICWA case. And,
yeah. You
know, there's right now there's an affirmative action case pending. There's some big stuff that's, you know, mm-hmm. I think people are kind of, you know, doing some nail biting, waiting to see what comes out of SCOTUS in the next couple of weeks.
You'll be able to explain to us what these decisions mean.
We'll see, Rick.
Yeah.
It's, I'll tell you what. Sometimes the Supreme Court opinions, there's so many of them. It's,
yeah.
But yeah, fortunately, we have the legal scholars that do a lot of that digesting for us. So, yes, but I'll definitely be back in July with hopefully some discussion on that topic.
Sounds good. Well, I want to thank you for going overtime today. This was a long show, but this is a pretty important development. So
I agree.
I wanted to take the time to make sure we get through it all. So.
Appreciate your interest, Rich, and appreciate the support of the listening audience. And onward we go.
Yes, indeed. So we will be back again. Justice Moore will be back. He's always here the third Monday of the month to talk about what's happening with the Minnesota State Supreme Court. We will be back with Legal Talk again in July. Thanks, everybody.
This has been Legal Talk with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore. If you have questions for Justice Moore or would like to suggest a topic for future conversations, email us at contact@kymnradio.net.
Real Radio, True Variety, 95.1.